1989 to finish my degree at UNI. Shortly thereafter, I met my now wife, Corrine, who's a teacher in the Cedar Falls School District at Cedar Heights. We have Sylvia, who's a sophomore, Annie, who's a seventh grader at Peak. When I decided to run for mayor, I looked at sort of my personal life in terms of some flexibility I had in relation to my schedule and my work. But then also looked at some of the things that I had done in the last previous 8 years. We had a startup software company. A friend of mine out of North Carolina was the brains, and he hired me for the brawn here in town to do sales. Zero clients, $0, and we just sort of said, here we go. So through phone calls and through conferences, blood, sweat, and tears, we got to the point 5 years later where we took this great product and we were purchased by the largest player in our space. You might be familiar with a company called Pearson. And so that's sort of formulating a plan what I saw the city to be, where I could lead the city in relation to that experience. In essence, we have a great product in Cedar Falls, and I'd like to have that same focus and emphasis of that business development within Cedar Falls and take the city to a different level, raise the bar of expectation. It's good to have goals, like to communicate those goals. And I wasn't hearing that in relation to where our city was. All I saw were empty lots in the industrial parks and infill areas around University Avenue, just sort of these things where I thought it excites me to be able to be one of the point people to work alongside a good city staff and call those companies around the world, even though Cedar Falls is open for business. So that excites me about the job. I know there's the politics of it. I know there's the client services, if you will, the communication piece. And I do believe I bring a good level of communication to the position. Really, communication, as most of you know in business, is mainly listening. And when you have that listening skill and be able to just let folks know that you're engaged, I think it's half the battle. So business development, communication, and it's just a different type of leadership. One that's in front of things in terms of, again, what we have is quality of life in our city and being out in front and helping that effort as a whole. I don't mind taking a stand. I think folks, I don't mind agreeing to disagree, but I want to let folks know where I do take a stand on. And from there, I think this is at least a level of respect. So business development, communication, and leadership is what I hope to bring to the table this coming November 3rd. So thank you.
Mayor Cruz.
Okay. Could somebody just take one? Let me start pass this around because I want to talk about these three simple sheets briefly. And thank you for inviting us. I know after this meeting, we're going to be talking about the legislative issues the Lions have, and I appreciate the Lions working with the city, and I know you've been supportive, and we're supportive of you, the TIP, continue to have that as a vehicle to work with business clients across the country. If you look at the industrial park, there's a lot of businesses, and we want to have land because sometimes we need bigger land. When Target came, we didn't have the land. Luckily, somebody had an option, we acquired the land, and some big projects were able to do that. So if you look at the industrial park, I think it's been very successful. Most cities in the state would say they would like to have what we have. There's some vacant land, the whole thing is vacant, and some of those industrial parks are very wrong state. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Andy and the school administration. We front page, career, 7% for 7 years in a row increase of students. Obviously, young families want to move to Cedar Falls, and it's the school is a major thing, and quality of life, and other issues. So in terms of the city, three things we usually talk about in terms of having a good city. One is basic services, and I'm very pleased to work with a lot of people, Larry Mosier, Marlou, and people to pass the option tax to make sure we have money in place to fix streets. We did that. We've done that 6 times. And last year, we did it not 5 years, but 10 years. And Cedar Falls, 85% approval rate to tax themselves. So that's a very strong indication that people are willing to put money forth. And if it's a project, they see the benefit of. So successful there. Now, we talked about three things in Cedar Falls, having the basic services, the streets, fire, police, pick up the garbage, take care of the sewage. Second thing is quality of life in Cedar Falls. A lot of people have worked a lot of years to make great things happen. Carol Lilly is currently the Main Street Director. There's been a number of people, Carrie Dara, your staff, and Mary Beth Sonneson have led efforts working with the city, working with owners and business owners to make a great product down there. It's part of our quality of life, and people come here to shop and visit us. So it's a great thing. The trail started with zero trails a number of years ago. Now we have an award-winning trail system that we've got awards in the state for tourism. So we've got quality of life. The schools provide quality. Obviously, UNI provides all kinds of things, sports, education, cultural things. Historical Society has 5 museums downtown, the theater, so all kinds of things, great things. You can come and visit Cedar Falls. So quality of life. But the focus on today is, and you've asked economic development, what is our plan, so what have we done for the future? I just like to talk briefly about these 3 sheets. First of all, and as I highlighted, and I won't ask you to read all the numbers, but you can take it with you. This sheet shows the 20 largest cities in the state, the blue one is Cedar Falls. We're the only city in the state of Iowa for the last 10 years, every year, has dropped the tax rate. So what does that mean? Sometimes, well, the tax rate can go down, but my taxes may go up. The next 2 pages are sheets from the Cedar Falls budget. The first one is last year. You know, obviously, everybody knows here that state passed a rollback to commercial 5%. So 5% on the far right, this is industrial commercial. It's not 5%, it's minus 6.66%. So the city added, you know, almost 1.5% besides the state rollback. The current year, 7.53%. So that's another 2.5% the city has added to actually cut dollars from people's tax bills, commercial and industrial. So that has happened in the city. Besides doing that, we put aside $3 million. For the last 6 years, we saved $1 million put aside because we're talking about building a new public safety building, a fire station, and a police, probably where this for the highway patrol is out on First Street, or where the hospital is. Those 2 places are looked at to better serve the citizens of Cedar Falls public safety. So these are real numbers. As Joe Friday said, probably most of you remember Dragnet, just the facts, man. So these are facts. They're not promises, they're not possibilities. They're real numbers that are current in the past 10 years. So that affects people's bottom line, taxes. So if we can continue to do that, continue to have a city that works on saving money and providing a great place for people to move. Obviously, West Nome is attracting older people. I think you have to be 55 or older, and Andy's been attracting young people. And there's, in between, if you look around, there's a housing starts. Like Downtown Andorra is all over the place, and there's a lot of new subdivisions being built and started. So a lot of people are moving to Cedar Falls. We have one of the lowest crime rates the state of Iowa is second behind Ankeny, and there's just thing in the paper in the last 2 days ago, this week, saying Cedar Falls is the 5th best city to locate for colleges in the United States, above where Harvard is, Cambridge, and above others. So 5 out of the nation. So we have low crime, we have good quality of life, so getting close to the end. Thank you very much, and I'll take any questions. I appreciate your interest, and the Alliance is a great partner working with the city on all kinds of things. So thank you for all your efforts in working with you to create a better community. To create wealth, I think that's the term. Is that right, Steve? I think I read that somewhere. Create wealth. Right?
I'm sorry?
Create wealth. That's the mission
create
of the life.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Alder.
Good morning. I would like to thank the Greater Cedar Valley Alliance and Chamber for inviting me to speak. I am Dave Alterman, and I'm running for mayor of Cedar Falls. Today I will focus my comments on business and community development regarding one major issue in this election cycle. University Avenue is the present and future of economic development and tourism in Cedar Falls. Because of its proximity with our great University of Northern Iowa, it is critical that this major thoroughfare is reconstructed in its current configuration with a center turn lane and signalized intersections for the following reasons. 1, reconstruction of the roadway as currently configured could be accomplished in approximately 1 year. 2, the majority of businesses along the University Avenue want the road constructed as I described. 3, doing so would save millions in taxpayer dollars. 4, some of these savings could be deployed in other areas of Cedar Falls, for example, College Hill, or to finance a revitalization of the University Avenue corridor businesses. 5, the taxpayers would support such a plan. 6, traffic would be efficiently dispersed along the roadway without reducing the current 45 miles per hour and not hinder public safety. 7, continuity with Waterloo's plan for their reconstruction would remain without causing bottlenecks. The point to be made here is that this city must be laser focused on how it spends each and every dollar of the taxpayers' money. We must listen to the people. They will tell you what's important to them. The business owners will convey how the city's policies affect their operations. All they ask for is a level playing field so they can plan their business future. The outlook for tax revenue streams that finance city projects is bleak. And to simply raise the property taxes of our citizens is no longer a viable option. Wasteful spending needs to stop immediately. If these things are done, the city can promote business and community development. We have a world-class city, university, and citizens. We just need to be good stewards. When elected, I will work diligently to ensure that we continue to listen to the citizens, prioritize our projects, and always spend the taxpayer dollars in a fiscally responsible manner. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Well, we'll do a couple of questions here, and so be thinking the questions you might want to ask as well, okay? But I'm going to start by asking you sort of a pretty global question, but what's the one big thing that you're going to do in the next or your first term as mayor? I mean, the problem you want to solve, the accomplishment you want to achieve, the opportunity you want to see the city take advantage of, what's the one big thing? I'm not talking about seven or eight big things, I'm talking about one big thing.
Well, the one big thing moving forward with the city, I think, is getting it moving away from the type of leadership we've had and moving to a different type of leadership. That's going to take a lot of effort, I believe. I have no misgivings that the learning curve is going to be very large. John's been in position for a long time. There's a lot of legacy information, folks been there a long time from the city. So there'll be some adjustments in how that relates to everything from finance to getting projects off the ground. Maintaining what we do have in a general sense, but also implementing what I want to implement within the city. When John's material says that we're world class, it's just a different type of mindset. And this, I think, is going to have to be a big change amongst how folks see how I relate. Because I never believe that anyone ever arrives at world-class status. I think we're always needing to strive for world-class status. Because if you think you've arrived, and think of all folks in sports like golf or in art, music, no one ever thinks they've arrived at world-class because then passivity can set in. Then the status quo can set in. If we're striving for world-class, then I think we can always hit a good higher mark and raise that bar of expectation. I think this is going to be a big challenge once I'm elected to convey that to folks. I don't think, in today's day, social media, I'm sure the Courier would love the Mayor's Corner, just letting folks know what's happening in our city would be a big boost in raising that level of frustration. And then before those details kind of come into play, because I know those details will come ongoing, it's going to be a learning curve.
Mr. Alderman?
I would say it's fiscal responsibility. We all know it's factual that the tax streams from the federal government to the state to the municipalities is disappearing. We have a policy out of Des Moines on commercial property tax equalization, whether you like it or not, is also reducing the amount of revenue that the municipalities will be able to spend. And according to the latest current, when the backfill stops, we're looking at approximately $2.3 million a year for Cedar Falls alone. So those things require the city to spend very wisely. We cannot spend money on issues, for instance, let's take the big one, University Avenue. We've got to be very frugal on what we do. We need to build our reserves. We need to have then prepared for the unexpected mandates. And the big thing there is the taxpayers feel strapped. You have a lot of entities coming to the taxpayers to support their entity, whether it be the school system, the county, the municipalities. There's been some shift from standard property tax to fees, permits, things like that. It's still a tax by another name. So we have to figure out how to prioritize based on what the people want. We can no longer do what we think. You can live, you can have your ideas once you're elected. You have the ability to convince your constituents why you think that's a good idea. But then you have to listen to them because they're the ones that pay the bills.
Okay, first of all, one big thing is, and I know you, the Lions has two people involved, and you've had people involved, Carl Adrian and other people throughout the process. We've had, since I was elected again in 2000, this is the fourth time we're doing a vision plan. I assembled and worked with people, Chris Hansen, the former chair of your board, and Teresa Custer was a marketing manager at MUD, our co-chairing effort. Andy's on there, superintendent of schools, business leaders, pastors, two high school students, two college students, putting together a plan for the city looking going forward. I was insurance sales, and there's a comment, four words, plan the work, work the plan. So you plan the work, and then you work the plan. The idea is to get people involved. We go around after we develop this plan of 32 people, and it's facilitated by you and I. So you come up with a plan. Then you go to various groups, the schools, the hospitals, Pam Goddard-Gaudel is on there, other people, pastors, Jenny Way, and go to the community and ask for them to involve themselves and commit to do certain things by a certain date. So if you have a plan, you're more likely to get some more positive than just waiting for something to happen. I would, as I mentioned, go back to numbers. We are saving money. We're the only city in the state for 10 years in a row that's reduced the rate, and we've reduced the commercial rate, and besides the rollback, another couple percent. So I think we're doing a good job. I don't disagree. We should continue to try to do better because you never get there. I think we're in a good spot now, all kinds of positive things, and third-party people are saying good things about quality of life. We've got awards from different things. Obviously, when the President of the United States and Google come and Senator Grassley all come within about 2 months and say, good job, Cedar Falls. I'd also like to thank the Alliance, Wendy, and other people, Lisa Scoobo, are working to have a marketing plan to go out and get IT companies. We've got a lot of great IT companies, Far Reach, Spinutech downtown, and out here, Williams, and West BAM and us, Profit Stars, and MUD is the biggest user bandwidth in the whole area, and they've expanded. So all kinds of people are using our gigabit, and we can do more of that, and higher quality jobs, and a lot of people are hiring you and I grads in the communications and IT companies. So that's higher paying jobs. So that's a good thing. But the base thing is develop a plan. We've done that, and I think we go through and check and have big goals. I know the Alliance has had big goals, and you try to work on that. Again, thank you for the Alliance for adopting the Leader in Me program. Again, education is so important to our communities, and business leaders said we need to have people that are well-trained, well-educated to take these jobs. And I know that a lot of people move to Cedar Falls because of the education. So education is part of our economic driver in Cedar Falls. They're attracted to education, quality of life, and the fact that we have low crime and we have a good tax rate and a lot of people working together. If we have time, Dan, I'll address Mr. Alderman's thing about University Avenue because I think it's a project, and tell me if I'm done. Basically, it's well thought, and I think it's an effective use of money, and there were 462 accidents last 7 years at University Avenue at that stoplights. So roundabouts are safer. That's the biggest thing in Cedar Falls. Safer transportation system. Thank you.
Mr. Alderman, we have had a lot of discussion over the years. The city has, about the idea of whether or not Cedar Falls should join Waterloo and Council Bluffs as the only three larger cities in the state that have full-time mayors. We're curious as to what your thoughts are about the idea of a part-time mayor and a professional city manager versus the full-time mayor situation we have now. Would you support such a move if the citizens came to you and asked that you consider that?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't agree with making the mayor's position part-time, simply because he's the elected chief executive officer of the city, and he's elected by the people. He answers to the people. A city manager is not elected. the people have no recourse against him other than through the mayor and council. And the problem I have with that is I don't recall seeing much oversight from this mayor or his council regarding staff. Let me give you an example. We talked about saving money. Well, a lot of that on the jobs and reorganization were on public safety. Let me switch to the management level at Cedar Falls. One fact. If you take the 16 managers on city staff in the last fully recorded year, they made $1.7 million. That averages $105,000 per manager. I think a proper oversight would have been done. There's an area that should have been looked at. And we could have had more career firefighters on duty. We could have made sure that the police had the force they require. Because truly, when you talk to the people out there, and I've talked to many in this campaign, that is one of their top priorities in this city.
Mayor Cruz, would you like to discuss part-time mayor versus full-time mayor?
Hey, obviously, citizen voted, that's fine either way, personally, or other persons fill that position. I think there is a study made by the International City Managers Association that says that if you have a strong political force and a very strong professional management within the city, that's the best system. And as I agree with Dave in terms of mayor is elected to serve the people. I view the mayor's job is community job, as I mentioned, going out and getting people together to pass the option tax, putting together this type of thing. The Blue Zone project was not part of the city, but a community type thing. And we've got 8,500 people that have been involved, signed up for that. So the mayor's job is more than just oversight of the city. And we have, I think we have the best system in Cedar Falls. We have both. We have a good professional system within the city that does day-to-day management. You have a CEO and a COO, you know, like the West Mill, Chris Hansen, the CEO, and Jerry Harris is the operations. And we have that system in Cedar Falls, and it's worked very well. And I am running to the same type of system, and it's worked well, and we should continue that. So that's my comments.
I think with the current description that I see with the position of mayor, it's not a full-time position. I think if the right candidate is in position of mayor, it could be full-time. It's up to the city council to guide that up, to spearhead it, to put down a good job description, hopefully with my input if I'm elected in relation to the business development I indicated earlier, a plan to get the message out, just different sort of triggers that can be employed by the position of the mayor. So I let the council decide that once I bring what I offer to the table, the job titles.
Last question for me, and then we'll open it up, but all three of you have expressed support then for sort of the current situation. Full-time mayors, may tweak it here and there, but it's pretty much the same. I think that most people in the community would credit Mayor Cruz's ability to let Nick McAllister pretty much provide the administrative oversight and foresight for the community. One of these days, I'm not sure whether it be next week, next month, or 10 years from now, but one of these days, Nick McAllister's going to retire. And it's going to force change simply because of his longevity. I'm curious to have each of you kind of give us just a little bit of a sketch of what life after Dick would look like for the city. And I'll start with you.
Well, there is some, and it's relatively soon. I know it's not next week, but it is in the near future. And that's one of the things is mentioned in terms of why I think I should be reelected is I have know the staff, and we do have a sort of a tentative plan within there. When it happens, it's not yet, but when, and it's sooner rather than later. And that's not next week, it's not next month, but it's in the next few years. And I think we've had Bruce Sorensen retire, Ward Stubbs retire, and we've had succession plans within the city, and there is a person that I think the council is comfortable with that at least do an interim type thing. And that may work, and or may aggravate someone else. But he has done, and he started here, and his only job has been at Ward Stubbs at 40 years. Bruce Sorensen was manager at 40 years. So we do have, those people have left, but we've filled in, and I'm not saying we didn't skip a beat. We have people that are, succession planning is important within an organization. As you mentioned, Dick has been an administrative position within the city prior since 1987. He started as city planner. And so, you know, for 15, 20 years, he was that assistant planner. So we have a good system set, and we have some people in place, and I look forward to, you know, continuing to work with some staff we have. There's a plan in place.
Good. And obviously, John, a little different perspective for the other two of you. Talk a little bit about how you'd like to see the city staff reorganized. You both suggested that there may be opportunities there that are being missed right now. So as you think about life after Vic McAllister,
I don't know if it necessarily needs to be reorganized. We've got a good staff. I've never come into this election with the mindset that I'm going to turn the tables upside down and my leadership style is my way or the highway. We've got good staff in place. Dick is a part of that. Some of the things have been controversial. I realize that. That, again, I think is the key for the mayor to communicate what is happening, whether it's behind the scenes or whether it's being implemented through the council. We have good folks that we would put together, I'm sure. I was in the recruiting business for a long time, brought engineers into John Deere. And there's a process to follow for pools of candidates, for interviewing process, for vetting processes and references and those sorts of things to make sure that whoever we do get in there, I think continues a lot of what we've had in relation to day-to-day activities. My goal as mayor is just to move that position of mayor to a different place. I think I can do that with Dick starting day one, and I can do it when he retires and we replace somebody else.
Well, this is a good one. Mr. McAllister, I have no problem having administrative support staff, but again, I'll stress, the mayor is the chief executive officer. The people need to elect people that have the proper skill sets to run the city. The staff is support. In this city, under Dick McAllister, you have a serious problem where the employees fear bringing their problems forward, of reprimand all the way to dismissal. Now that's factual. I've talked to the many, many employees in this city, from rank and file to management. That's unconscionable. And that happened under Mayor Cruz's watch. That has to stop. We want our employees to feel like they're a valuable part of this city. They're part of the solution. And under my leadership, I'd bring all parties together. I would end this veil of secrecy that this mayor and council and staff like to hide under. It's called collective bargaining. My background is in personnel and human resource. I have a degree from UNI in it. And to just blanketly hide under that and not allow communication between your city employees and the council or the public is egregious. It should never have happened. And this has been going on for years. Under Dick's leadership, you have a set few, what I call the minions, that have profited from this city at the expense of the taxpayers. Dick's become a multimillionaire in his salary from this city, plus or minus $40,000, including the university. That's just wrong in my eyes. It's wrong in most taxpayers' eyes. That should not have been happening. If the proper oversight was done, it shouldn't have happened. We could have had more firefighters to protect the citizens of Cedar Falls. We wouldn't have two public unions going at each other. They should be working in tandem. And that's just wrong. Many things have gone wrong at City Hall. Now, I'll give John credit. John, you've got a long tenure and a lot of good things. I love this city. I enjoy living in Cedar Falls. That's why I chose to live here.
Okay. Any other questions?
One of the items, tools that has been used extensively to help economic growth in Cedar Falls is tax increment financing, TIF. Your views on TIF, its role in economic growth, period. Mayor?
Okay, first of all, it has been, and Alliance has taken a position to try to maintain TIF, and there's been some issues, Corville and some of the places where they've given TIF quite a bad name by doing some things, pulling jobs out of Iowa City to Corville and some things like that. We're well aware of this. I think in Cedar Falls, the industrial park has been, two industrial parks has done well, pretty well. We have, we've put aside, Dave mentioned reserves, we put aside money in TIF so we can do the project on 58 and Viking Road. It's a joint project, but the city of Cedar Falls is going to use some matching TIF money to help pay for that because of the safety, and it's a very important project, transportation. We also have, we had a TIF downtown has benefited from the TIF, and College Hill is a small one. Walmart, we had a short-term TIF for there, and we put partially a road out there, a public road, not something internal, but paid for part of that and used the taxes from Walmart. And after it was in place about a year and a half, that was closed. About $309,000 was released from that TIF after immediately after that was done. So it was set up for one project and one only. The industrial park has provided a lot of jobs and has provided a lot of money to the state. I mean, if you talk about sales tax and income tax from the number of 7,500 employees. So it's benefited the state, it's benefited the local economy, provided jobs for our community. I know that we've released this last couple of years $1 million each into the general fund, which goes to the county. I think the schools are, the state is backfilled, they're not as affected by the directly the cities and counties, but there's some backfill from the state that's a little different setup. But we've released $1 million last year and this year from the TIF to go into the general fund. So it's been used, I think, well in Cedar Falls, and they passed some laws. We can't give land like to attract a business in Waterloo or vice versa, so you can't use TIF benefits to attract from your local in the county. Sorry, I guess sorry to steal from Minnesota, but now that's kind of a little strange. If they're further away, you can take them, but if they're right next door, you shouldn't take jobs. I understand that. It's a local economy. We're all part of this in the Cedar Valley. And we benefited, like the TIF target was taken from Minnesota. Jesse Ventura, probably remember that guy, he was the governor, and Target's there. We almost lost Target to them, but we got Target, and the TIF was one of those reasons. We've used it for roads and buying land and creating a very strong two industrial parks. Another one has just started the last couple of years, and it's already got two businesses there. And the one that just opened is already talking about expanding again this year, early next year. Standard distribution has tied railroad and trucking together. So I think we've used it well, and we should continue to do that. And the less restrictions, the better. I know they put a lot of restrictions, and we're trying to prevent that by the legislature. Thank you.
TIF is important as long as you apply this rule. Proper cost-benefit analysis has to be done. And by that I mean, the residential taxpayers can't incur all the cost and get none of the benefit. At a recent city council meeting, I sat and listened. I think it was Allen Occupational was moving from Prairie Parkway over to the industrial park. No jobs, just a move. TIF was applied to the developer that was building the building. In my mind, that's wrong. There has to be a benefit to the citizens, to the residential taxpayers and the commercial taxpayers that are fully paying their taxes to give TIF to a business. Another example, the big Target move. That's fine. Use TIF to bring them in. But it's a contract. And if they contract X amount of jobs that they will supply, they should do that, or there's consequences. I think Target, I could be wrong on this because I don't have the facts right in front of me, but I think they were required to add 500 jobs, and it ended up being just over 100.
Well, 900 jobs and about 600 jobs, but then they also built a second building and the retail, so they added a total of 900 jobs.
The point is, John, There has to be a benefit to the residential.
900 jobs is a benefit.
Let me finish.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I'll give you another example. You had $6 million coming off the TIF out at this industrial park out there, not the new one. If the city would have coordinated with the DOT at the time, had the project, according to TIF regulation, in the pipeline, that $6 million could have been used entirely for the Viking Road 58. Now, John and the city administration can spin it any way they want. If they would have coordinated, that money could have all been used, which, according to the latest figures, now it's $10 million for the city. That cuts that cost down to $4 million, John. That's a huge savings. That's just poor management.
So I think the TIF is great for the competitive advantages that it provides. Proper oversight, absolutely. To bring in the TIF, that's one piece that Cedar Falls has going for it. I'll go back to the quality of life we have in relation to what we should have in our city for the businesses, the industries. We have to be careful as well because we want to make sure we're negotiating in a position of strength. Principal is a good example. They came in and had their TIF 10 years later. They were moving out of town or TIF us again across the street kind of thing. And if we have enough businesses moving to our city or looking at our city and considering our city doing business here, then I think we can approach big businesses like that with a position of strength. And that's going to help all of our community. And in fact, even if we are continuing to bring good new businesses in, more than two per year, which is the goal from the 2020 plan John mentioned before, doesn't compute with me that two per year. But if we are bringing continuing businesses in here, it raises all the boats in relation to hiring good people. Think of the industries of smart manufacturing, IT, computer, all those types of industries where they have disposable income. Those folks working there spend that disposable income all around town. I can see everyone around this table. In relation to that kind of money, you'd love to see coming through your own personal business. That's going to help our community as a whole, from taxes to evaluation, and ultimately to help in Cedar Valley long term.
Next question. Well, I had one. Maybe this is a little bit, forget that. Wastewater. We've got a factory downtown that pumps a lot of poop. A lot of people suggest that's a little bit of a detriment to our downtown area. What do we do to fix that? We're investing millions and millions and millions of dollars into that because of EPA regulation and the like. And yet it still says that we've got this thing sitting right in the middle of our downtown. What are your thoughts about the future wastewater treatment in Cedar Falls? Jim, why don't you go first?
I don't know much about that topic, honestly. I know that we go downtown sometimes and it stinks. I know they've tried, they've worked real hard to get rid of that. And the different work that has gone on with that station over off of 18th, I think, by McConnell's office. I don't know enough about it to be able to intelligently convey it.
Well, I'm not an expert either in this area. I will tell you this, though. Let's take a look at the sump pump issue that's currently taking place in Cedar Falls. According to the councilman I talked to, they wanted to limit the scope of reducing the runoff into the sanitary sewer system, so they only focused on the sump pumps. Well, with discussions with people from Waterloo, I was informed that there are homes older than 1969 that have water runoff tile systems around them running directly into the sanitary sewer system. So I contacted my at-large city councilman with the city of Cedar Falls. I said, hey, if you got an EPA mandate that wants you to reduce the amount of runoff water into our sanitary sewer system, then why are you not doing it across the board? Well, the cost factor. Well, Waterloo dealt with the cost factor by allowing $2,000 for each household that did not have a sump pump to to put one in to handle this excess runoff so it's outside the sanitary sewer system. And that's part of this problem you were talking about. He goes, do you know who's going to pay that? And I said, yeah, the taxpayers. And that is a good expenditure of taxpayers' money. Fix it once and for all. You come back 10 years later, that $2,000 per sump pump is $5,000. That's the way the city should be working. Let's not spend in areas we don't need to. Let's spend in areas like that we do. Then the EPA won't come knocking back at our door 10 years down the road and say, you still got a problem with runoff going into the sanitary sewer system.
So a little more from downtown to the whole city, but downtown there has been some efforts made, and I know that was the question. We should move it out of downtown. Well, who wants a sewer treatment plant near them? No. I mean, we've had rec centers or aquatic centers. People didn't want that near them. So traffic and smell. So no one, and it's there for a reason. It's near the river and it's downhill. You want to have treat sewage by not pumps as you can. Gravity flow is cheaper than pumping it. So that's what sewer treatment plant's been down there since probably day one in the city. So I know that Mark Kittrell, who's been involved in the Alliance on the Place to Stay, he's made a major investment in building new buildings. He's got more plans. So it's an issue. The river sometimes smells in the summer with dead fish, so it's not necessarily pleasant. And it's hard to move there. The sump pump, as Dave said, Waterloo has, as you probably read, has been fined, and they just paid a fine. We're trying to avoid that. We've done a number of things by fixing every year. We have a maintenance plan every year to line sewers that are leaking for various reasons. So we've done that for about 15 years. Every year we use some money to reline sewer pipes so to prevent that. We've also built sometimes some additional larger storm sewer can handle the water runoff. It shouldn't be in the sanitary sewer. So we are not under court order. We're trying to prevent that. We had the INI done in city or houses that were required to have some pumps that are built after 1969. Both cities after 1969, they're required to do that. Well, sometimes people have cut those and we've done like a number, hundreds of homes, and only about 5% are in violation of it. Somebody has redirected that or reconnected it. And so, as Dave said, $2,000 they gave that, but it's all going back. It's not free money. It's money that the citizens of Waterloo have to pay that $2,000. So we're having a plan in Cedar Falls, and it's a couple hundred dollars is usually the cost if they have to do something. So, and most people, 95%, have not had to do anything. They're in compliance. So that good compliance in Cedar Falls, so we're going to try to prevent that. Trying to prevent the EPA. We've done some other things that we're building. There's a plan to build probably another interceptor sewer. It's part of the sewer that goes from downtown to the industrial park, and about two-thirds of the city needs to be replaced, and so we're saving money for that. So we're going to do that also. So the smell is, it's not, like I say, some days it's not the best, and it's I guess, a fact of life. But sewage, I mean, that smells. I mean, you can't, I mean, then they've treated some, and they've done a decent job trying to reduce some of the smell. And so, thank you.
Anybody?
Yeah, so we often talk about bringing new businesses in, and that's good, economic development. And at the same time, we hear a lot from current businesses that are clamoring for employees, and they need people like smart manufacturing, new people, and kind of that go-between from what used to be the traditional college route versus the into the workforce route. And this developing area in between, we're trying to all get our minds around. What do you see as the city's role in that bridge between bringing business in and helping facilitate the type of employment base that they need to continue to sustain and grow?
I think it's fostering the continuing relationships with Cedar Falls Education, with the university, with Hawkeye, with actually being able to bring in those sort of expertise from all over the world, whether it's the expertise moving folks from in Iowa to Cedar Falls and in the country to Cedar Falls, or even folks around the world to make the destination city that it is. The other factor I see as well is, and it's seen with a lot of companies we have already, at least in the IT, in the computer industry, is where the culture is created here to almost start a company, if you will. I think of SpinUtech as a prime example, just utilizing the assets that we have. And now they're based here, and they have a lot of people employed, and they pay good money. but they're also able to push that to a satellite location where there is potentially a deeper pool, whether it be Des Moines or Chicago or around the Midwest, even out west and out east. But if we continue to focus at Cedar Falls as that epicenter of entrepreneurial activity, there's no reason why I don't think we could be the Silicon Valley of the Midwest, because even most of those companies, except the very large ones, they're hunkered down in these areas, but they are able to expand around the world, and that's what's exciting in bringing outside dollars into our community. But it certainly is a partnership, because we do want to make sure that that level, we have a lot of good programs, a lot of good partnerships with you and I, with the Cedar Falls schools. Ben Schaefer is one of them that, just by his own goodness of his heart, does a coding school on how to code. Back in the 80s, we never had that at UNI, but we did, but it was a mess. So we need to continue to foster those relationships as well, but we also need to think globally, because the outside workforce can still work remotely and have the anchors be here in the city.
I know in terms of, I just read, in the period a couple days ago, Cedar Falls unemployment 2.7%, which is almost, full employment. So that's a nice problem to have, but again, it's then how do you find those people to work? I know one of the biggest things the city can do is trying to work to provide the quality of life, work with the downtown and other places to have a place people want to stay. I think you and I, a lot of the people hired from you and I for SpinUtech, for Far Reach downtown, those are two major companies downtown, IT, and Williams out here in Industrial Park, Profit Star is Wade Arnold, who's been involved in the Alliance. So those guys need quality people, and so if we provide a great place to live, safe, for young families, I think that's one of the best things that they can do is provide a place people want to live. I know there's a question of there's for rent signs around town, but I mean, Mark Kitchell built two buildings downtown, and they're full of a waiting list, so people want to have some type of, certain quality of life and atmosphere that downtown provides. So I think if we provide an overall quality of life, and the university is, as I said, the university is working. You have Danny and Lottie's on your staff working on that kind of thing, working with trying to encourage and work with you and I to bring students out and visit businesses here. And so they know that there are jobs that they could work on here. So hopefully those things continue with the schools and the Alliance working together with education.
One thing I see that was problematic is Hawkeye Tech used to feed the technical skill level students out of there to the businesses. It switched more to a feeder school for the university. We need to take a look at that. I would like to see something done at the high school level through Dr. McGee and the school board. I'm taking a look at, for those students, not every student in high school has the interest nor the desire to go to college. It would be great to see some kind of program set up there to get them skill sets so they can, out of high school, at least have that entry-level abilities to go to work in these companies that are hurting for additional workers. I still think we do not enough to retain the graduates at our great university. It's high ranked. We got to take a hard look at that. We have some entrepreneurial things at the college that we could utilize. An example of that, we have to make up our mind to deal with the College Square issue. We keep on moving these things, Parade Parkway. We have all these things going on in the Northern Industrial Park. All well and good. College Square still sits there. It's a problem. And we're making it a bigger problem with what we're planning on doing with the city's plan with the University Avenue. I think we need to focus there and take care of that. I think we could do a lot more up at the university. That university brings in millions of dollars a year for our community and all business. We need to continue looking at ways we can enhance that area up there, College Hill, wherever there's an opportunity. It needs to be done. They deserve it. The students deserve being proud of not only their university, but their surrounding area.
I have a quick question. There's kind of a philosophy in I think, elected officials, you can vote with your conscience, or you can vote with your constituency. What
I mean, I've heard you listen to the people, listen to people quite often. What happens to the people that don't align with your conscience? Which one do you go with? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I would think there's a question earlier for him talking about what keeps you awake at night. And I know this question about University Avenue is brought up. And 58, we had 10 fatalities on 58 in 10 years. And the state came up with a plan, a barrier. And so there haven't been any accidents along there, but along the stretch, except at the intersections. There's been 7 fatalities the last number of years at the intersection traffic lights on 58. There's been fatalities on University Avenue. There's 462 accidents. So if I can see something that can save lives and save injuries and save taxpayers' money, I think the elected officials need to vote their conscience. And the voters, we have an election process. I know people in the past said, well, we need to pave streets in Cedar Falls. And they voted to do that. They lost the next election. Well, sometimes I think you always have to do what's right. And if you can sleep at night, do what's right, then that's what you should do. And if it can save lives, I think every evidence I've seen, state, federal, county, city, have shown roundabouts are safer. So if we don't do that, that would be, I think, a travesty that we should do that if we can save lives. And the evidence shows that. Every piece of evidence from federal, state, county, they've had evidence over here, and the city, and they're building them all across the state. Ankeny is the fastest growing city. They have 10 roundabouts. They have things we don't have. We only have 4. So they're obviously not affecting them, and they've done economic development. There's a lot of businesses along University Avenue that are in favor. University Avenue, we need to spend the money wisely. If we just put a patch on it, and underneath there is, to me, it's like painting a rusty pipe. It may look good for a year, or painting a building that's wood is rotten. You can paint over it, and you could pave University Avenue fast, but then a couple years later, you need to do it again and again, and people don't want continuous work out there shutting down their businesses. So we want to do it once, and do it hopefully the last for 40 years. University Avenue was built like in 1960, so it's been there, you know, almost 55 years. So we want to do it right and do it effectively and cost-effectively. It may cost a little more initially, but you've got to look at the life cycle cost, not just the day's cost, how it's going to work, and reducing maintenance and saving lives and saving accidents. Because there are people, traffic lights can work if people do what they're supposed to, but about half the people think yellow means done it and go through red light, and the other half means slow down and prepare to stop. And sometimes they mix and they mess up, and there's life, there's accidents, and people are dying. Like I say, there's have been deaths. There have been, like they say, 462 accidents there. So we should try to reduce that.
I got a preemptive on this one. Sorry, Jim. Wow, where do I start on this one? John, University Avenue was never going to be paved over. You know that. That's disingenuous for you to say that. The core samples showed that the substructure was outused its useful life. They would never, the DOT would never, it's against their principles, do an overlay on that kind of system. So stop saying that. Saving money, the city has admitted, Ron Gaines admitted, after 6 months of trying to get him to clear up the issue on the least expensive, that if you took the council add-ons off of tearing out and replacing as is, that is the least expensive.
That's not correct, period. We can have Ron, you're quoting Ron Gaines improperly?
No, I'm not. It's on the record. It's on the record, John.
It's on your
Andy, ask your question again so I can get back on track.
Yeah. Conscious or constituents? So right. Again, if your constituents don't align with what you believe is morally, ethically, or best path, or which side you go to, which side you vote?
Well, it's a little of both in my book. Because once you're elected, you have the ability to draw your vision, your conclusion, your thoughts, and then it's your responsibility to go to the citizens and convince them why it's been their best interest. And when you cannot do that, then you should concede to their wishes. Because John, as a single voter, or each of those 6 councilmen, they're one vote. The taxpayers pay the bills. If they tell you they do not want it, in my book, you should concede to their way of thinking. Anything else is arrogance, and you're putting your wishes and desires on them. You're forcing it on them, just like this administration is forcing their idea of University Avenue onto the citizens and the businesses. Because, John, the majority of the citizens and the majority of the businesses along the corridor do not want roundabouts. You didn't do your due diligence. You know it. You guys coordinated this. The facts stand on their own. I challenge anybody sitting here to go back and rule, look, or look at the record.
Are we tied at 8:30 in the morning? Or?
Yeah, you're pretty much going to close your up right here. Conscience.
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Andy. I think it as I would see that leadership piece, I also have to look at the leadership position someone's in, whether they are leading the city or leading the school district, and the decision process they're in. So if I'm leading the city, and if I agree or disagree with something moving forward, there is a responsibility of that leader to lead, to communicate, let folks know where you stand, bring your skill sets to where we can lower the frustration levels, and we can raise the level of expectations. But you also have to respect the process, which in our city is the council. The council is the power behind that process. So I can do the best I can to lead with my conscience or with the consensus. But ultimately, that is what has to come to light. And that is, the decision makers need to come to a consensus. You don't get, and consensus means you don't get what you want, but you're hopefully moving the ball forward. So you have to respect all those things as a whole. As I'm running for office, the key is running as a leader, not as a single issue. And we've heard the single issue, I think, a lot this morning. Because even as a leader, you look at this process, it's pretty much a done deal for University Avenue. It was a 6-1 vote. Look at the political landscape in terms of what has to happen with the city council in order for that to make a change. So it's a false promise to believe that you can change it. And then, as I've heard from John's supporters, don't support Brown because he's going to change University Avenue. That's a false premise. So you have to, the political world gets a little bit weird now. But I realize that when you get in that leadership position, there's a lot more factors to stick my finger in the wind and say who agrees and who disagrees. There is the process of understanding and gathering that information, but when the decision's made, you have to respect that process and move forward.
Good. Thank you, Jim. Dave, John, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
It's been enlightening, and we appreciate your willingness to step forward as candidates, and good luck to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.